All right, today is Sunday, September 6, 2020, and we're back in the classroom, surrounded by plastic walls and no students. Although I think on Tuesday morning I'm going to be giving a eulogy, speak about Rabban Steinsaltz to the Kollel. It's not a major talk, it's a half hour they want before Rabbi Bednash's shir. And I believe at that point there will be some students allowed into the classroom with social distancing and masks, etc. I want to dedicate today's shir. A week ago today was the funeral of a dear Talmud of mine, Rabbi Michael Levenstein. It's Jack's older brother's son. And Michael studied here in the Kollel. I believe he was in the Chava program. He went on to become a medical doctor in Male Adumim, married into a wonderful family that also had come in Aliyah from Canada. And my wife and daughters tell me I was the one who suggested the Shidduch originally, so I get a little bit of a assist there. And Michael went on to become, first of all, a Talmud Chacham Yirei Shemayim, a very insightful human being, a wonderful human being, and a wonderful medical doctor. Six wonderful children, Mamish LeKavod LeTiferet Medinat Yisrael, with all that that implies, Am Yisrael, Torah Yisrael, Eretz Yisrael. And the Ribbono Shel Olam took him early. He was all of 61. If you looked at this week's Jerusalem Post, there was a beautiful half-page description of Michael by David Weinberg, his chaver, who's also a bit of a Talmud of mine, married to a Talmidah. And we've all contributed to Eretz Yisrael, Atidin Batei Knesiot Shebabava La'alotatza, the Gemara at the end, I believe it's Daf Chavtet Megillah, and this is the finest that Canada contributed to the young state of Israel. And, all right, we can't argue with the Ribbono Shel Olam, as Rabbi Belkin used to say, Keno hatnish tamashkanta af di ebishta, no one has a mortgage on the Ribbono Shel Olam. But Michael's memory should be in golden letters, lekavod ulatiferet, and inspire us. And I want to dedicate today's shir in his memory. Now, I was asked a lot of questions about Corona, and I'll deal with it at the end of the shir. I'll end a little earlier and deal halacha lemaisa with what is happening. But let's come back and let's move ahead with Yontif Sheni. My wife said to me, what are you teaching today? I said, well, I'm involved in Yontif Sheni. She said, you spent 2 years on it years ago. I said, well, it's a topic that's always giving birth to new material. So you can never say, ah, I finished this topic, Baruch Hashem. It's ongoing. But as I explained last week, there's a tremendous basic machlokes which most people don't even know about. Most people, Baruch Hashem, take for granted the Shulchan Aruch Paskin, but the Shulchan Aruch Paskin, and we were all raised that we have to follow the Shulchan Aruch. We're not free individuals to go against the Shulchan Aruch. Although you understand, I've told you many times that when you're the Kuntres HaShach, Mori Rebbe, my long discussions with Rav Soloveitchik, my Rebbe Mufad on this topic, if you're a great Talmud Chacham, I'll quote the Rav, you better know full well why you're paskening against the Shulchan Aruch, but it doesn't mean you can't paskin against the Shulchan Aruch. But all right, this is a very delicate question that takes us back to teaching Kitzi Shulchan Aruch. Rabbi Lichtenstein once gave a whole talk on this on a lunch foot. Is it better to teach kids Kitzi Shulchan Aruch? Or already at a young age, tell them this is one psak, there's another psak. It's not a simple black and white. It's a delicate question. The real answer is there's no black and white answer. It's the Gemara discusses in Gittin how old children have to be if they're Yotaimim. For their mekach u'memka, their business deals, to be valid. So there's one opinion, 6, 7, 7, 8, 8, 9. And the Gemara says it depends on the child, and this is very true. Certain children, you have to tell them, this is the halacha. You have to build a fence around them. Other children, you have to explain, this is what we do, but it's a machlekes, v'yesh panim l'kan, v'yesh panim l'kan. All right, you're starting to develop two different types of Talmidei Chachamim. It's the Hasidish type, the Hungarian type, which went with Bikiyat, or the classic literature type, which already went with understanding and learning. And this will, as long as humans walk the face of the earth, this will not change, because we all have different abilities, and some of us have this strength, that strength. So in accordance, Hanoch Lanao P.co. But there's a tremendous machloket here. How do you judge Yantiv Sheni, where your feet are or your mind is? And the Shulchan Aruch takes for granted it's where your mind is. If you're living in America, even if you're in Israel, you're still an American. If you're in if you're visiting America, but you're really an Israeli, you're still an Israeli. And this is the machloket. And you get involved here with insoluble problems, because on one hand, Yantiv Sheni is a din derabbanan. On the other hand, you have tefillin. Tefillin is a din d'oraita. You mean to say an Israeli in Kew Gardens Hill shouldn't put on tefillin? And then the whole question, which is where we got involved last week, Reb Menashe Klein, what about making a public minyan in Israel? The great synagogue made millions out of these minyanim. All the tourists, the Waldorf Astoria, the King David, these are not small hotels, the Citadel, pour in to the great synagogue and observe the Yantiv Sheni. And I don't know, I walk by, I feel offended. I see them in their Shabbos clothes, and I'm carrying, I don't, today it's hard for me to carry weight, but in the old days, let's say I'm carrying a computer, I'm carrying a telephone, I'm driving my car, and there, what's this, Yantiv, davening Yantiv Dik. All right, this was the question that Reb Menashe Klein got, and he certainly answered in the negative, quoting Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, that it is offensive to the country. And this gets us involved, what is Yantiv Sheni, gets us involved in philosophic Hasidic concepts, which I lectured on many decades ago, the emanations from God, the rays of God. I'll let David Tversky explain that to you. He has toned the blood in him. But I have to accept what the Tzemach Tzedek said, what the Alter Rebbe said, and the Rav Kook also, the famous story of Rav Kook. There was a famous hotel in the old city, and there were tourists there from Poland, and they wanted to make a Seder on Yantiv Sheni, and Rav Kook was absolutely opposed. Well, they pressed him. Finally, he allowed them to make a Seder as long as they had a band present. In other words, it should be obvious that it's not Yantiv, but all right, these are people from Chutz Laretz. And this is the question that he was asked. This is what he answered. And halacha l'maisa, we can yell and shout from today to tomorrow. We don't like, could you imagine in Chutz Laretz and Woodmere, we're going to make a Eretz Yisrael Dikka Minyan on Yantiv Sheni, and here in Jerusalem we're going to make a beautiful Chutz Laretz minyan on Yantiv Sheni. You can yell from today to tomorrow, it's offensive, but HaKesef Yanet HaKol, unfortunately, money's power, even in the Minig Yisrael, even in Halacha, and Hefzid Meruber, etc. I don't have to elaborate. HaKesef Yanet HaKol. And you'll still have these minyanim, and Rakefin can yell and shout from today to tomorrow, and they'll just put a mask on him and tell him to get lost. And unfortunately, this is the reality. Now, then he got involved, and this is what we ended off the last class. We were right in the middle of this tshuva, and here he says something which is very important. But the question is, what are you paskin for a student who comes for a year? And I've had to deal with this question now for over 50 years. What are you paskin for a student who comes for a year? Well, once again, you get involved in the basic machloikis. If you paskin like Reb Chaim, like the Chacham Tzvi, that it depends where your feet are, it's a din like Purim, then of course the student is here. He's not in America. One day like everyone else. That's the way Reb Shmuel Salant paskin. Then he tried to be a little machmir, to do a seder without brachot, etc. And people didn't accept this decision. They felt that, look, these kids are from Chutz Laaretz, they're going back to Chutz Laaretz. And you have the other factor, which I mentioned, which I discussed with the Rav, that you don't want a kid to go back and be mezalzel in Yontif Sheni. He'll say, I didn't observe Yontif Sheni last year in Eretz Yisrael. Why do I have to observe Yontif Sheni in Staten Island? So it's a very delicate question. But the older the student is, I think more poskim have paskined. It's really one day that he observes here. The second day, if he doesn't want to do malacha, fine, but everything else is like in Israeli. And here there's another factor, and that is the beauty and the distinction and what fabulous women we have raised in Eretz Yisrael. And again, I realize that there are wonderful girls in Chutz Laaretz as well, and we have a few from here that I wouldn't boast about that are dreaming of marrying an American passport. I've been through life. I'm not. I would like to be naive, but I can't. But percentages went out. It's like a vaccine. Everyone will say, I don't have to tell you what went on with Rav Shmuel Kamenetsky, that some people died from a vaccine. Yeah, if you don't take the polio vaccine, 100 will die. If you take it, maybe one. You understand? We work with percentages. The graduates of the Israeli institutions, the Ulpanot, these are girls that you can't find anywhere else in the world. They're committed to Eretz Yisrael. They're committed to Am Yisrael. They're committed to Torah Yisrael. Where Zoyche today, I can quote to you from some Haredim that he says, I never saw tzniut like I see in Yehuda V'Shomron. And I don't have to tell you, if you know the Israeli politics, the Ulpana girls go with long, long skirts. And Beit Yaakov, they don't allow it. They won't allow these long, long skirts. They're frightened they'll be identified as Ulpana girls. So Baruch Hashem, this is to our credit. So today, a young man comes from Chutz Laaretz. There's a fine chance he's going to meet a girl here in Israel. Doesn't mean she was born here. It can be a girl raised here who speaks English, native language, from her house. But he's going to marry and remain here. And just this Friday, Eli Weinstein called me. I got a lot of calls on Friday from all over the world. Some of them were shyness that I'll deal with later. But Eli made me jump for joy. I danced the Kazatska. He was telling my children on Shabbos. I had children, grandchildren, and Baruch Hashem. Telling them all, another couple came in Aliyah, returned to the Kollel, but he's not the same guy he was a year ago when he was a teenek person sitting in the Kollel. Today he's a Yerushalayim Ezrach with the right to vote. And I only hope he won't set a record and vote three times within a few months. Anything can happen here, as you know. So today, this is a big factor. And Rav Menashe Klein says this. He says, I can't even start the Paskin in Shaila like this. You have to know every individual. And you have to decide, in accordance, is he really serious about coming in Aliyah? Is he open to meeting a girl here? What's his profession? What is he preparing for? What's he going to do in Israel? And here he says something, which this is from Menashe Klein. This is not Aaron Rakefet. This is not a card-carrying member of the Mizrahi party. And he says, Abo bizman hazeh shebaruch Hashem chekel matzav hapanasa bi'eretz Yisrael. For gam yesh bi'atzeinu hakadosh baruch Hashem alafim v'veravot me'acheinu b'nei Yisrael shem retora mitzvah asher lekein ein tamin levatel ha'chlata b'kal v'alo davar v'yesh lehitchashev b'chol zeh v'gam ki yesh lefamim yesh lo habei mishpachot u'kiyotze b'zeh. What he's saying here is very simple. You all go. It goes back to the Tosfot at the end of Ketuvah, famous Rabbeinu Chaim. Why isn't there a mitzvah in his time? Why didn't people rush to Eretz Yisrael and dak drachim, mesukanad? Everything was difficult. Everything was dangerous. There was no panasa here. Today we're living in a country, take a look what the dollar is worth. If the government wouldn't uphold the dollar, it would already be below 3. And this says something to us. What's happening here? You take a look at El Al, which is being sold. All the bidders are Haredim. I don't know, our boy, Ribbono Shel Olam. The Haredim today control the money in the Torah world. It's unbelievable what these people are worth and what they're bidding. And Jared Kushner just got in and he backs the Haredi from Muncie, who's bidding through his son. And wow, El Al, could you imagine? Will El Al taken over by Haredim, Bezrat Hashem, Lekavod the Letiferet, and the Panasa, it's how can I make it tangible? Think in 1969, the Groners, Mrs. Groner, Mrs. Betty Groner, the Groner Tzadeket Levracha, this is label Groners, Zeichet Tzadik Levracha, it's overwhelming, died of Corona, the Rebbe's right hand, Label's sister-in-law. She was married to Label's older brother. So she came to the Merkaz Klita to take my wife and a few other Anglo ladies and show us how you shop in Israel. How you shop. There was no frozen food. We had to make so many adjustments. You had to learn what the shuk is about. And today you take the food in Eretz Israel, you go all over the world, all you're getting is Israeli food. How many of you have been in Moscow? How many of you have been in Leningrad lately? St. Petersburg, I should say. Petersburg, they call it. How many of you have been in Borough Park lately? How many of you have been in Los Angeles? How many of you have been Germany, the Emirates? Where's the food from? We had one of the biggest exports. It's a Gemara in Shabbos that silk dresses and beautiful cakes will be exported from Israel by Yemot HaMashiach. So here too, he's absolutely right. But he says something else that's very, very powerful. And here you have to have lived the Israeli story, the Israeli dream. It's at times you're overjoyed, and at times it's very frustrating. Ben-Gurion, does he deserve credit? Doesn't he deserve credit? When Ben-Gurion died, blew a siren throughout Israel. Everyone had to stand up for a minute in his memory, 2 minutes. So I stood up in Michlaam. It's my early years here in the 70s. And I remember Rabbi Koopman said to me, he gave me a dig. You were the only one that stood up in Michlaam. And did I have the right to stand up, didn't I? What would I do today? I have to tell you, Dov, I'm still in doubt what I would do today. Why? And I'll tell you. Ben-Gurion deserves a lot of credit. He established the country. He went against the State Department. It took a lot of guts. We have a prime minister named Netanyahu. I can give you a long things of what he hasn't done. Because America vetoed it. If Netanyahu would be here in 48, in my opinion, there would not be a state of Israel. So on one hand, we have to thank Ben-Gurion. All of us here came in Aliyah. How did we come in Aliyah? It's a result of the state of Israel. We thank Ben-Gurion, established an army. Put it, remember 1949, I've often spoken about it, the Eitzel, the Lehi, the Palmach. Everyone had to join together. These are not small matters. On the other hand, Ben-Gurion had this vision that the religion is over. We don't need it. It doesn't help us. It's not part of the new Jew. We're going to have a new country. There'll be no more anti-Semitism. Ben-Gurion went. He took the Eidot HaMizrach, and you all know the stories, and it's true. This is not the propaganda. It's not anti-Ben-Gurion. These are facts. They sent them to religious kibbutzim. They came in with chickens and slaughtered them, broke their necks. We don't need sheikhtim here. They took off the payas. Oh, what they did to create a new type of Jew. And it hurts me until today when I walk the streets and I see these typical Sfardim, Yemenites, dark. And he's without a yarmulke, without any, with long hair, without any vestige of Torah on his face. and she's dressed, I would say, one third or one quarter of what a normal upright human being should be wearing. And I think to myself, imagine what their grandparents were, their great-grandparents, what Ben-Gurion did, the heritage, the Chil Shabbos. Ugh. So this is a tremendous problem. And when I came in Aliyah, if you stood on a corner in Jerusalem 52 years ago, I would say one man out of five was wearing a kippah, and one lady out of 20 had her hair covered. Today we have in Israel, it's beyond words, hundreds of thousands, millions of Jews who are Shomer Shabbos. Shalom Chalalim Shabbat Beparchesia. You have hundreds and hundreds of thousands of Jews that, mamish, the whole story accepted B'lev V'Nefesh, Devar Hashem Zu Halacha. We have, all right, it's the whole question of ghettoization. When I came in Aliyah, they figured every Anglo would go to Bayit Vagan. Bayit Vagan was all religious. It was not planned that way, but that's what it became, like Hanof. I remember when Hanof began, it was secular. No one believes that today. The original families had to move out of Hanof. All right, they didn't lose money on what they bought, but they were uncomfortable. Hanof is a community where it was never officially decided you can't drive on Shabbos. But there's signs up, be mechabed, the feeling, who will drive into Hanof? Yes, my grandson once drove into Hanof. It was in a, that was the army during the Second Lebanese War, where they had to pick up soldiers in Hanof. So an army truck at a time of war, everyone understands why it's driving into Hanof. Today you have areas, communities, settlements, sections of cities, kulam kedoshim utaharim. All right, this is an interesting educational question. Where is it better to raise children? Again, there's no black and white answer. I purposely didn't want to live in an all-religious neighborhood because in my life experience, I've seen too many proverbial Beis Yaakov graduates discover, wow, there's a big world around us, and before you know it, that whole Beit Yaakov training is gone. But on the other hand, there's no question, in my old age today, it absolutely hurts me whenever I walk on Shabbos and someone is starting the engine. It hurts me on Rehov Aza, they've turned it into North Tel Aviv. Bar after bar is open, people sitting naked on Shabbos, half drunk. There are more dogs in my neighborhood than human beings. It's beyond comprehension. I once spent the Shabbat in North Tel Aviv. Every third store dealt with dogs, getting them haircuts and doctors that take care of it. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. People walking today in Yerushalayim, all right, in my neighborhood, all right, some people are from, but they have dogs. I grew up, I remember in Yeshiva University, there was one newlywed family that had a dog, Rabbi Bernhard, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, who did so much for Yiddishkeit later in life, and he had a dog, a newlywed. Evidently his wife was afraid to be left alone in the apartment in Washington Heights. And I remember when he walked with that dog, everyone commented, Atreifa hunda, hunda, Atreifa, hata yita hund. And all right, today it's you have so much choice where to live, and there's so much Torah, and you're at Shemayim in schools, and with all our problems, I don't want to say we don't have difficulties. We'll talk about it. My world, Tzioni Dati, the Haredi world, of course we have great achievements, we also have problems, that's the nature of human existence, that be it Mashiach Tzidkenu B'nei Rabbi Yomeinu. But, wow, Reb Menashe Klein is right. Ben-Gurion, turn over in your grave when you see over 2 million onto 3 million Shomer Torah and Mitzvah. It's hard to believe. Look at the Knesset. The majority of the Jewish Chavrei Knesset is Shomer Torah and Mitzvah. That's be Kachal Lavan, headed by a Satmar, by Gans, who Baruch Hashem knows how to put on tefillin and daven, but he's not, I don't know if he's a Shomer Shabbos, I don't think so, but maybe I'm wrong. I give him the Chabad would say, don't be negative, be positive. But take a look how many of their people are Shomer Torah Mitzvah. Almost all their women who are in the Knesset, wait, let me just play with this, almost all their women who are in the Knesset are Shomer Shabbos. I think every last one. It's beyond comprehension. All right. So Reb Menashe Klein here is absolutely right. So halacha lemaisa, when an individual is learning here for a year and he's 19, 20, 21, 22, and he has the shaila, I would never ever pass him like the Shulchan Aruch. I would tell him, you want to be a tzaddik? A day and a half lechumra. The second day, don't do malacha. You don't want to be a tzaddik? One day, yesham mi l'smoch. But this is Reb Menashe Klein. Okay. The next shaila is also a yantiv dik shaila, yantiv sheni. It's chelet yud aleph, siman tet yud. And this is a fascinating shaila. Why? Because the question came up, Reb Menashe Klein shot from the hip. We rabbis, and myself included, and I'll smack my face, you know, you think you know a little bit, so you get carried away. So I remember one time, we were sitting around, this goes back some point in the 70s, in BMT, and there was a difficult mamzeret shaila that had come up. So I opened my mouth and I said, bring the shaila to me, I'll find the heter. And that Purim, they taka jumped on me and emulated me, bring the shaila to me, I'll find the heter. But all right, you have a little learning, you know, and I have to tell you, there was once a very difficult shaila in BMT, and I did find the heter. It turned out the shaila was not a shaila, but I knew what to do. A shaila was very simple. The kid, I used to remember his name, came in Aliyah, I don't know how from he is today. I meet him, I've met him on occasion, and I wonder, he's without a kippah, it troubles me, but okay, you can't win them all. But this kid suddenly goes to his Rebbe in the morning, he started learning for the first time, and he says, my mother remarried, I'm from the second marriage, and she was totally religious, I don't think she ever got a get. And all the kids are talking, and right away, it's a Suffolk Mamzeret D'oraita. If the mother married, if a Jewish man got divorced civilly, remarried, and never got a get in between, unbelievable, this kid is a mamzer. So his Rebbe said he should talk to me. So the first thing I told him is, I can't do all the halacha here, but if you get hold of my third volume, Rakafet Aaron, it's all in there. If anyone wants that copy, come to see me one day at Gris, and I'll be happy to give it to you. My students sponsored it, and I have a Baruch Hashem, I can give it out graciously. So I said to the kid right away, who was your mother's rabbi? I said, don't talk to anyone else. This is Hapi Halacha, keep it quiet. Who is your mother's rabbi? So kid gives me the name. I couldn't believe my ears. It's Eli Marcus. There's a clone of the Rach and one of my best friends. He was back in America already. It has to be the early 80s. It's a whole story there why he had to go back. But anyway, I give him a call and he starts laughing. He says, you absolutely have no shaila. I said, what are you talking about? He says, his mother was married to a guy the first time around, but her second husband was much more traditional, and the kid went to day school, so she didn't want the kid to know that she was married to a guy the first time around, so she just played dumb. But if she was married to a guy, there was never kedushin. If there was never kedushin, you don't need a get. If he's from the second marriage, He's absolutely a kosher kid. But nevertheless, I was a dummy showing off knowledge. Bring me every shaila. I'll find the chetta. By the way, I had another student. God have mercy what I've seen over the generations. This kid was declared a mamza. And he never married. His father, he settled in Israel. It's from a, I don't want to mention any more details, but it's ancient history already. And this kid was mamish declared a mamza. So when I was in his home country, I was the guest of that country for a month, of the Mizrahi. And I said to them, the Rabbanim, I said, give me the details. They said to me, Rav Rakefet, with all due respects to your learning and knowledge, the greatest Rabbanim dealt with this case, and there's no way out. He is a mamza. What the story was, at least the little bit I picked up, was that his mother was married. This is a country with a lot of traditional Jews. And she was married, kedat v'kedin, chuppah v'kedushin. And the marriage broke up. And he refused to give a get. One of those stories of hatred, enmity, again, breaks my heart, but anyone who's a teacher here, going to teach Torah, from seventh grade on, teach students decency. And God forbid, if a marriage breaks up, the same way you entered decently, exit decently. Instill it within them. But all right, humans are humans, and many people choose not to be tzaddikim or righteous, unfortunately. So she fell in love with another man. And they're anxious to get married. They went to a liberal rabbi, it was called. And he said, you don't need a get. A chutzpah. You never know what's going to happen. And he married them without a get. And from the second marriage, she has a son. And believe it or not, the father and the son both became balei tshuva. And the kid lives in Israel, had a business, etc. No solution. Now, what are we talking about right now? I'll tell you what happened with Rabbi Nasha Klein. This is one of a kind. It's, again, right we left off, Simon, Tuf, Yud, Chelik, Yud, Aleph, Mishnah, Halachat. What happened? Very simple. They were sitting around in a base medrash in Borough Park. It was 8th day of Yontif. And the guy whom they had sold the chametz to walked into the Beis Medrash and said he's busy, he wants to get rid of the chametz, he wants to sell it back. Here, take the chametz, give me my profit, and shalom al Yisrael. No, it's Eish Dei Yontif. So they told the guy that, look, we can't do anything now. It's still our holy day. Come back tonight, and you'll see the rabbi then. All right? Either Rabbi Menashe Klein was sitting and heard the story, or someone came and told him the story. And Rabbi Nasha Klein said, what was the problem? You had an Israeli sitting there. The Israeli should have bought it back on Achron Shel Pesach. Why did you make problems with the guy? I know we'll come to this, not this week, but next time, Bezrat Hashem, with you sell chametz to a guy? No, when's the last time you drank schnapps during the week? You can't believe I have schnapps unopened from the 1960s. All right, what can I tell you? Purim, I'd hate to tell you how I'm Mekayim, Chayiv Adam Lepsume B'Puy. I take a little bit of wine and drink it and go to sleep. Tosfot, Baruch Hashem, that's our Mekayim. All right, that's the way we are. Did you ever see the way Goyim live. I've flown on planes with Goyim, Ribbono Shel Olam. They're drinking and drinking and drinking, and they don't go to the bathroom. That's what bothers me. We Jews, if we drink right away, all right, we're in the bathroom. They can drink and drink. A guy walks in last day Pesach, grab it, get the chametz back. You have an Israeli sitting there. Well, the vot went out in Borough Park that Rabbi Menashe, you know, as is Rabbi Menashe Klein, has his supporters. And those who put him down, we spoke about that last week, Mishnah Halachat, Mishana Halachat. Oh boy, were they talking against Rabbi Menashe Klein. What has happened to him? He's off the wall, buying back chametz on eighth day of Pesach. What is he doing? Ribbono Shel Olam, even if he's an Israeli. But didn't I tell you an Israeli in public has to observe everything just like all the other Jews? I walked into Young Israel of Hillcrest when I spent Pesach with Malkus' family, my wife's sister. Basically, I have a brother in America, in Las Vegas, married to a Rosh Yeshiva's daughter. He taka married Big Yichus, Rav Sherman's daughter. Anyone who went to RJJ remembers the name Rav Sherman. Rav Dov Sherman was from Chaim Zimmerman's Chavruta in the 30s when he came to America. Was a gon. So my brother's married to her. But they live in Las Vegas, but Malka's sister lives in Hillcrest. So I walk into the Young Israel and they forgot to tell the custodian that Yontif Sheni, he has to come and open the shul and turn on the lights. And I walk in, they got all excited. You're an Israeli, turn on the lights. I told them, Iman of Shach, I can't turn on the lights. Number one, I paskin like the Rav, I have to observe total full days in Hillcrest. And even if I didn't paskin like the Rav, but like the Shulchan Aruch, how am I allowed to turn on lights? It's Chilul Yontif B'Parhesia, which I'm not allowed to do. So Iman of Shach, I couldn't help them. So, here, they started in, what's Rabbi Menashe Klein talking about? So Rabbi Menashe Klein wrote a whole tshuva to explain himself. And I have to tell you, Rabbi Menashe Klein was 100% right. And this takes us back to something I've spoken about in class many times. The famous tshuva of the Ramah, Kuf Chaf Hei. Look up the Rabbi Asher Ziv edited edition, Merkas Harav, Tshuva 125. And it appears in Shin Lamed Tet, in Shulchan Aruch, in the Ramah. I want to ask you a question. When was the Ramah Misadah Kedushin, 10 o'clock Friday night, when Shabbat began at 5 o'clock? Jack, remember? Famous Ramah, Ribbono Shel Olam. The Ramah, what? Who are we talking about? This is not David Hartman. This is not some reformer. Ribbono Shel Olam. This is the Ramah, Rav Moshe Isserles, Mipivanu Chayim, Mimavanu Shaitim. Who are we talking about? Mesada Kedushin, hours after Shabbat began. And that was the famous story that there was a poor caller, she was a Yatoma. And again, lo aleinu, men, I apologize for being a man. Some men are so cruel, hard to comprehend. I don't know. Maybe there are women who are cruel too. I got letters from America complaining that the women are just as bad as the men with the money issues. I don't know. But it shocks me. So the chatan, Friday, and that was when Minig Yisrael was to make the wedding Friday right before Shabbos. Remember, we've spoken about it. That way, they were Masada Kedushin, and the Sudat Mitzvah was after Kabbalat Shabbat, so that even the poor people had where to eat Friday night. So, at the Ketuvah, minutes before Shabbat, he says, no tiki, no washing. I want more money. And it took hours till the Ramah got her brothers to agree to give him a little bit more money. And he compromised And finally, they were Masada Kedushin 10 o'clock at night. Shamati acharai kol rash gadol. The Rama writes, people were cursing him, maledicting him, a sheikh, it's enough, a trumpenik, whatever name your rabbeim called you by when they were not happy with your progress in Gemara. Oh, what they were doing to the Rama. So the Rama justified himself. And he said very simply, tell me, what is the isha of being Misada Kedushin on Shabbat? What is the prohibition? Can anyone tell me? Where's the prohibition? No Torah prohibition. So there are two reasons why we don't do Kedushin. One, Shema Yikatev, they'll write the Ketuvah. They're so used to writing a Ketuvah, if they don't finish it before Shabbat, they may continue on Shabbat. Okay, it's a rabbinic law. Secondly, kinyan. Kinyan on Shabbat. I mean, this is very interesting. When we think of Hillel Shabbat, we think of stores being open. The truth of the matter is that a store being open on Shabbat is a lot less of an isa than someone driving a car on Shabbat. What's the problem? He's taking money. All right, kinyan. It's an isa derabbanan. It's not one of the lametet malachat. The man is gaining a wife on Shabbat. Rabbinic prohibition. If it's a rabbinic prohibition, it's not one of the lametet malachat. And to save a Jewish lady from embarrassment, from heartache, from tears, what our chachamim went through, the tears of a woman, absolutely permissible l'sadeh kedushin 10 o'clock at night. That's the famous Tshuvat HaRama. And by the way, later we discovered the Bach Tshuvat that we didn't have before, the Bach HaChadashot. He too was Masada Kedushin one time, Friday night, for similar reasons. So Reb Menashe Klein says, what's wrong with buying back the chametz? Buying back the chametz? He's an Israeli. There's no Iser on him. And even for other Jews, the whole Iser would only be rabbinic, kinyan. Well, if the man can make a kinyan, if the man can buy back the chametz, if the man can save heartache, he is a guy. Who knows where he'll be tonight? Do it b'tzina. This is not public. Do it quietly. Absolutely allowed. Psak of the Shulchan Aruch. You are an Israeli Jew. V'shapir muta b'zeh. And that's why I felt there would have been a very easy solution. Let that Israeli go into a side room, buy back the chametz, for him Pesach is over. At night, the Israeli will either sell it to the Rav or give it a gift, and it solves the entire problem of chametz on the eighth day when the guy walks into the shtibel. I want to sell back the chametz I have. I don't know where I'll be tonight. And Rav Menashe Klein pops forward. Well, they should have done it. There was an Israeli there. Side room, Betzina. Not a Malacha Dioraita. Certainly Mutta. Solve the problem. No one has to worry where the guy will be at night. And the Jew will have peace of mind. The chametz is back in Jewish hands. And it's a very, very fascinating tshuva, Reb Menashe Klein defending himself. I don't know how many times this question ever came up, halacha l'maisa, a guy walking in on the eighth day, an Israeli Jew sitting there. But in theory, I would say Reb Menashe Klein is 100% right. Even though I do want to add, there is a chumrah that we all observe, that even though if we would paskin where Israelis and chutz laretz, the Shulchan Aruch's psak, but mishum chumrah of Pesach, we don't eat chametz until the eighth day is over. That in other words, and certainly if you're chayshish for the Rav Shita, you're not allowed to eat chametz till the eighth day is over because you're in chutz laretz. But nevertheless, to buy it back, me'ika hadin, Rav Menashe Klein is absolutely right. Okay. Now, I'm going to go one step further. Baruch Ato Adonai L'melech Olam She'Kol Yevet Baro. Not simple days with the heat, but min dafkein weiter, not simple days with the corona, very depressing, the news overwhelming. Morai v'rabotai, ladies and gentlemen, there's never a Beis Medrash without Kiddush. So my wife said, what new material is there on Yom Tov Sheni? So this is a book I quoted Jay Solomon, I don't see in front of me, but Jay Solomon got all excited because he showed me Rabbi Lamb published the book under the same title. Rabbi Lamb's book was 70 Faces of Torah, something to that effect. And this volume that just came out a few months ago, Shivim Panim LeTorah. And I have to tell you a little bit about it. It's a very, very fascinating volume. I actually am quoting it in something I'm working on now on Das Teira and what happened in Germany, etc., Vilna, Reb Chaim Oizem. And I apologize to history. I wish I could redo, go back on my time machine. When I came into Mechola, I started teaching in Mechola in 1971. And Yomo, it says here someone came into the waiting room and it's admit. Do I have to admit them?
No, I'll do it.
You'll do it. Admit. Anyone who wants to come in, absolutely admit. Why do I have to admit them? Why can't they come in on their own? Okay. All right, well, wait. You'll tell me after class if you know the answer. So I have to say, Michala, Rabbi Kupman was a very interesting individual. It's someday it's worth giving an entire shir about him. He was very innovative and had this vision of it's poliaguda, a vision that no longer has takers today, because the world has moved on, and anyone who's interested in poliaguda can be a chadalnik, haredim datiyim liumiyim. And he had visions of building an academic school for women on the highest academic level, and at the same time, totally in consonance with Dvar Hashem Zu Halacha. And for many decades, it really succeeded. Ultimately, what's happened here in Israel, Michala had to reinvent itself today. Today, it has graduates divisions, giving masters, etc., because you have a campus, you need students. But today, the universities have changed that a person who's Chadali feels at home in any university. You have so many. I was up in Technion. The heart of the Technion is the shul. It's amazing. And there's so many from people there. I visit my children there. You think you're in a kibbutz. And they say, who gets married young? Who's going for doctorates? And they're in the apartments. It's a different world today. Rabbi Kupman attracted a fabulous faculty, second to none. Gedolei Yisrael, but these Gedolei Yisrael who had broadened and were part of this general vision of that fit right in. Again, I can't go into great detail, but if you know what I'm talking about, it was not Agudat Yisrael. It was Polei Agudat Yisrael. Very similar today to Chardalim Charedim Datiyim Liumiyim. One of the people on the faculty was Moshe Arend. And I have to be honest, I never really appreciated him. I knew he was a Yekka. I knew he came from Germany. I knew he was in the Bible. I didn't realize how much knowledge this man had. I can still see him smiling at me and talking to me. And, you know, I was a young hotshot, a Talmud of the Ravs, a Halavai. I would live up to what they thought of me. And it seems after he died, his family collected all his writings and publications and correspondence, and they put out a volume, Shivim Panim LaTorah. And this volume is very, very fascinating. It has his, he explains the Netziv, his Peirush on Chumash. He explains from Sinsra Ful, his Peirush on Chumash. He deals with all the Achronim, the Ktava HaKabbalah, and his Peirush on Chumash. Nechama Leibowitz, her approach, one after another, helping you understand where they're different, where they're unique, where they innovated. And then it has all his collected writings, and then his memoir of where he grew up and where did he grow up. The cover of his book is a beautiful portrait of Rav Shemshon of Falls Hirsch's synagogue in Frankfurt am Main. And this was his home, this was his education, this is where he grew up, how he survived the Holocaust. He winds up in France, and then Baruch Hashem winds up in Israel. Now, in the book he has correspondence, and the most fascinating part of the correspondence for me was the very Shiloh we're dealing with on page 718. He is going out Shlichut to France. And this is the problem that Rabbi Grunstein has year in and year out. People are going to teach Torah in the Gola. Now here is someone going that there's no question he's going to come back. But what does he do with Yontif Sheni? And when you go on Shlichut, you don't just go for 30 days. It's not Rakefet visiting for a month. He's going on Shlichut 2 years, 3 years. I don't think any Shlichut should be less than 3 years, because it takes 1 year to learn. If you're going to America, it takes 1 year to learn how to play baseball. The second year, you're a tremendous teacher. The third year, you're worried, what will you do when you go back to Israel? So you need 3 years to really pay them back for bringing you and teaching in St. Louis or Seattle or elsewhere. So he turns, this is interesting, he turns to Rav Shlomo Minhaha. Do you remember who he was, Rav Shlomo Minhaha? He was one of the most chashuva Yishuv HaYashan families, I believe it was the Mintzberg family. Lamdanim Mufhakim. He was Bucky and Shas and Poskim I seen before my eyes. But he brought him. He became Rav of Bayit Vagan. He taught in Michlala. Imagine at the schut of teaching next door with people like this, including Rav Shlomo Minhaha. He was the Posek. He was one of the first, if not the first, to write a sefer, I have it, on Psak in the Israeli army. All the shilas that came up, what do you do on Shabbos? What do you do on Yontif? How do you, what do you do? What can you carry into battle? What can you take with you on when you're a shomer? What can you take back? How do you drive back? How do you drive, etc.? How do you get the guns ready, the tanks loaded? All the questions that we never dreamt about for a few thousand years. And he turns to Rav Minhaha with this very question. So Rav Minhaha writes to him, logically speaking, he says, it's an open Gemara, quotes the Gemara from Baba Batra, Daf Chet Omid Aleph. And the Gemara talks about two different concepts, Anshei Ha'ir and Yoshvei Ha'ir. When are you a fully integrated citizen, or when are you only a temporary resident? And the Gemara seems to say, Shloshim yom letamchumchei, Shlosha chadashim lekupa, Shisha leksut, Tisha lekfura, Shneim asa lapasei ha'ir. And what the Gemara seems to say, 30 days, you're in this area, you're in Katamon, you're visiting, they're coming around collecting food for poor people. I mean, who would ever dream this is halacha l'maisa in America today? What's going on even in the five towns? Baltimore, they showed me the what they do for Shabbat, and the storage area is one block long. I couldn't believe how much food they have there waiting to be distributed. So 30 days, you got to contribute food. 3 months already is when they want staka. Someone, I don't know, for the sake of argument, wants to open a new yeshiva. They need money to rent space for him. 3 months. 6 months, they're collecting clothes for the poor. You hear, 6 months, you have this obligation. Burying the indigent, those that don't have money, 9 months. 12 months for building the walls. And Rashi explains that that's the walls to protect the city. That is a much greater expense. There, 12 months, once you're in the city for a year, you are part of the city. So Rav Minaha says from that Gemara, it seems very simply that this whole question, gradually, you're part of the city, you moved. For the sake of argument, I moved from New York to Philadelphia. That was a very traumatic move. In 1961, I'm going into the rabbinate, Lower Merion, a suburb of Philly, and I have to move to a new city, and I remember I have to adjust new radio stations, new bank, where do you go shopping? Acme Supermarket. Who heard of that in New York? Penn Dairy, I think it was called. Who heard of those supermarkets? So there's a gradual adjustment. But it would appear from this Gemara that by the end of the year, you are in. You are a full-fledged, responsible citizen. So what he's saying to Rav Minahar is saying, you have a year, you're going to be there at least two, at least three. Yes, we're absolutely sure that you're going to come back, but we can't be certain. So at the end of the year, you have to be like anyone else in Chutz Laretz. That would be the simple pshat according to the Shulchan Aruch's viewpoint. All right. But there's only one problem. And you saw that problem last week. And he quotes the problem. You look into the Sharei Tshuva, there's every example in the world. People are in Chutz Laretz, married to women in Israel. The women in Israel don't want to leave Israel. The guy has been in Chutz Laretz 2 years, 3 years. His wife is in Israel. You're still considered an Israeli. You have people in Eretz Yisrael. They're engaged to a girl in Chutz Laretz. They're going to get married in Chutz Laretz. They have a business in Chutz Laretz. When can you believe it? The guy's in Israel and he's considered a Chutz Laretznik, a Chutznik. And more than anything, you see the Shulchan Aruch, the Sharei Tshuva, the Nosei Kelim. No one quotes the Gemara from Baba Batra. No concept here. 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, 12 months. And this problem, amorphous, flexible, like a sponge. It's not black and white. You can't crawl out of it with a very, very easy answer. And he says, and he's quoting the Sharei Tshuva, once there's no difference between 1 year to 2 years, then there's no difference between 2 years to 3 years. And he says, following the psak of the Shulchan Aruch, yes, we're sure you're coming back. We don't know if it'll be at the end of 2 years. We don't know if it'll be at the end of 3 years. And what he paskens v'alach is exactly the Shulchan Aruch. You're an Israeli, you daven like an Israeli, you observe like an Israeli, but as far as the public thoroughfare, you have to act like a chutz la'aretz person. And then he tells them, on Yisru Chag, when Israelis are back to Chol, put on tefillin without a bracha. Now watch, this is not over, but I want to call your attention to the end of the letter. Remember what I told you, Rav Minacha came from the Yishuv HaYashan. He was related to many members of the Batei Dinim of the Eidah Charedit. What happened here? Why should that happen?
I don't know.
Can you hear me? 1 second. Morty, can you hear me?
Is being recorded.
Morty, can you hear me? You are muted. What do we have to do? My God.
Yomo?
Okay.
Can you hear me now?
I dropped out. Oh, they're back. Okay.
Okay. Thank you. Wow. Thank God Yomo is sitting next to me. Yomo, tomorrow don't budge. Sit next to me because I can't control my teaching. I suddenly disappear. You disappear. Ribbono Shlalom, have mercy on us and heal the corona and bring us back to normalcy. I don't mind at that point. Let there be classes and let there be Zoom around the world. I see people listening from Brooklyn, from Chicago, from Florida. So okay, take advantage. If you stay up all night, that's your decision, not mine. Now, I want to quote to you from the end of the letter that he writes to Moshe Aaron. I bless you that you should be successful, and I want to tell you I have good news for you. Two of my daughters, who were your students, I don't know if that means in Mechala or in Chorev, two of my daughters who were your students just got married this past Chodesh Elul. One married a Talmud from Yeshivat Mechaz Rav. And he gives the names, Yehudit. The Ruth married to a Talmud from Yeshivat Kerem B'Yavna. So you see here that Reb Shlomo Minacha has come a long way from the Yishuv HaYashan, from the Eidah HaCharedit, but he remained a Gadol B'Torah, Yiret Shemayim, a great Talmud Chacham, and it was a schut that we were on the same faculty. Now the next page, 719, evidently Dr. Aaron got the letter and he wrote back to him immediately, what do you mean I have to put on tefillin if I have to observe in prachesia like a chutz la'aretz person? The psak of the Shulchan Aruch, and the Shulchan Aruch says nothing about tefillin. This comes up later among the Achronim. So what do you mean I have to put on tefillin? And there he answers him that, look, This is the psak of the Shulchan Aruch. But it meikar hadin, the Shulchan Aruch paskins, you're an Eretz Yisrael person, even though you live in Paris for 2 to 3 years. Once you're an Eretz Yisrael person, Isru Chag is chol for you. If it's chol, you have a chiv the oraita to put on tefillin. When it comes to the bracha, bracha deina ma'akfot, and therefore l'chumra, I told you not to make a bracha. But he says, ma'ika hadin echiv the oraita, and you're an Eretz Yisrael thick person walking the streets of Yontif Sheni in Paris, please put on tefillin. And then evidently Moshe Arend asked him, but what about you telling me to make Havdalah on Motzai Yontif when all the Chutz Laretz people are making Kiddush, Psak of the Shulchan Aruch? So he tells him that Me'ikar Hadin, even in Eretz Yisrael, he called some Rishonim, you should be making Havdalah, because there's a difference between the Kedusha first Teichag, which is a Kedusha the Oraita, to the Kedusha of the second Teichag, which is a Kedusha the Rabbanan. But we don't want to say Havdalah because you're making Kiddush, it's Tatei Desatre, Kedusha Tayom, you can't wipe it out with Havdalah. But you're in Chutz Laretz, you have a right to make Havdalah, because there Me'ika Hadin, you're still an Israeli, and for you, that Havdalah is 100% applicable. So, you see, this is the correspondence. This is Moshe Arend, and this is Rav Shlomo Minahar, and all you heard about was dealing with the psak of the Shulchan Aruch, where your mind is, not where your feet are, and they're struggling 12 months, a year, 2 years, 3 years, the Sharei Tshuva, so many different considerations, you can't give a black and white answer. Fine. Now, what I'm telling you does not appear in the volume. It was told to me by Moshe Aaron's nephew, who was kind enough to give me this volume as a gift. Who is his nephew? Dr. Yitzchak Arend. Dr. Yitzchak Arend, Moshe Aaron's older brother, went back to Germany. Moshe Arend and another brother never forgave their older brother. Why did their older brother go back to Germany after World War II? Because these people were raised in Germany. They were raised in the Hirschian school, and he couldn't manage the Ben-Gurion period. To live in Israel and to see the leaders of the country totally treif, garnished mit Yiddishkeit, no Yom Kippur, no Shabbat, etc. Couldn't manage it. Felt more at home in Germany, where he grew up. He didn't go back to Frankfurt, went to Köln, if I'm pronouncing it right. And was successful, from what I understand, and raised from kids there, which I believe all are back in Israel. If I'm wrong, the majority are back. So Yitzchak Arend is a psychologist, Talmud Chacham, Yirei Shemayim. He knew the Rav. At one point he did postdoctoral research in Boston, in the Boston area. He studied in Manchester, studied in Gateshead, etc. In native language, he speaks English as if it's native language, German native language, Hebrew native language. His original years were in Jerusalem. Very fascinating. So he told me on July 4th, I didn't even realize the significance of the date, but Elie Weinstein already forgot about July 4th, Baruch Hashem. July 4th, 2020, he told me that years later, Moshe Aaron went on Shlichut again to France. Of course, through the World War II, where he was, where his life was saved, French became one of his native languages. So he went to Rav Minacha and asked the same Shaila again. And Rav Minacha, by this time, the revolution was in the public thoroughfare. The Chacham Tzvi, Chaim Briska, the Rav Kook, the Chazon Ish, the Minchat Loza, Rav Ovadia Yosef, Rav Shmuel Salant. Oh my gosh. And by now already it became, I would say, a political psak. The Agudistam or Paskin, two full days in Eretz Yisrael. The Mizrachistim all paskin one day in Eretz Yisrael. So he comes to Rav Minacha, and Rav Minacha paskins, you're in Paris 2 days like everyone else. Shulchan Aruch, we don't go that way now. And Rav Moshe Aaron tells Rav Minacha, I asked you this shaila years ago, and you paskin just the opposite. Rav Minacha looks at him and says, I don't even remember, but this is the way I paskin today. And Taka, he paskined years later, exactly what I did when I was in Chutz Laretz a number of times on Yontif Sheni. I acted like every other Jew. And that's a fabulous sock. Because, I'll tell you why, and now I come back to Rabbi Grinstein and the Shaila and sending Rabbanim to Chutz Laretz, Machanchim to Chutz Laretz, and what did they do on Yontif Sheni? And he sent me a whole, I have no room here, I don't know where anything is, unfortunately, because I can't spread out. Yomo, did you see where I left those papers I had? 1 second, let's see. I didn't put them back in here. Anyway, oh, I see. All right, the papers are here. I have them. So Rabbi Grunstein sent me a whole country. She wrote, Yesh li yom yom chag chag. And it's written by Talmidim, and Rabbi Grunstein gives sources to deal with the problem of all these shluchim and rabbanim. I tell you, I would solve the problem as follows. No one goes Chutz La'aretz. Every contract reads 3 years. Once you read 3 years, even according to the Shulchan Aruch, I would say that makes you a Chutz La'aretz person. Then you have the psak of the Rav, of the Chacham Tzvi, to fall back on. And they paskin me'ika hadin. 1 day in Israel, 2 days in Chutz Laretz, nothing to do where your feet are, where your mind is, only where your feet are. And once, I think, it's a 3-year contract, mimanevshach, even the Shulchan Aruch, 3 years, is the chatichat zman. You'll see what I'm leading to in a minute. And the fallback is, Baruch Hashem, I know a guy named Rakefet, and he spent Yontif Sheni in South Africa, and Yontif Sheni in Australia, and Yontif Sheni in the United States a number of times. And he acted like any other Jew in Australia, South Africa, America, with one exception. On the Yisru Chag, after davening, he hid in his room where he was staying, put on tefillin, didn't make a bracha, and said Shema Yisrael with the tefillin on. He shouldn't be meyed eidu tsheka, right? That was the only exception. Sfart, the suffix, in psak, tefillin and chiv dioraita, that's what he did do. So that's the way I would paskin, but this kuntres begins with a whole mimer which I read, I believe, by Yedidya Meir. I believe I read it originally in Besheva. It's as if he doesn't know one word about the Chacham Tzvi. Everything circles around the Shulchan Aruch. Let me just go one step further, then I want to deal with Corona. One step further. Gentlemen, this is a tshuva of Reb Moshe Feinstein. And this is a tshuva where there was such critique against Reb Moshe on all sides, including the Ma'aneli Geret of Rav Schwartz. Oh, he goes crazy with this tshuva. It's Igrot Moshe, Chelik Sheni, the second time he dealt with Chorech Chaim. It's in the volume on Choshen Mishpat that came out in 1964. It's very hard because Reb Moshe has Chelik Aleph, Chelik Bet, Chelik Gimel. It's very confusing, and he has on various chalakim in the Shulchan Aruch. But I repeat, this is the Igrot Moshe that came out in 1964 on Choshen Mishpat, and in it he has on Orech Chaim Chelik Sheni, Siman Kuf Aleph. This tshuva was written in 1962. It's written to Reb Asher Zelig Rubinstein Shlita. Now, anyone can correct me. I'm working from memory. If I'm not mistaken, this Rabbi Rubinstein taught for many years in Itri. Itri was once a powerful yeshiva. And as an overture to tomorrow's lecture, if I'm not mistaken, I remember the Horowitzes. These were people that are like an aunt and uncle to me, very active in Young Israel. Julie Horowitz is national vice president in 1944. And I remember the Horowitzes telling me the Rubensteins were regular Young Israel people. And their son went to Israel and never stopped learning, never went to college. The swing or shift more right after World War II. And this is Asher Zelig Rubinstein. I don't know if he's alive today. I don't want Halavai, someone should know him and give me more details. And he writes to Reb Moshe that he's been in Israel for many years, for 3 years, and he's now back in America visiting his parents for Yontif. But he is going to still in Israel. But nevertheless, he's a kid. He doesn't have panas. He didn't go to college. So nothing is certain. What does he do when he goes back to Israel? And Reb Moshe writes to him, there is no doubt in my mind, you got to look at the tshuva to see it word by word, that even in Israel, you are an absolute ben Chutz La'aretz. And even though you've been learning there 2 years, 3 years, and you decided to stay there, you're single. Your parents are in America. And who is supporting you? Your American parents. And you see you've come back to visit them, and you don't know how soon you're going back to Israel. And he says, it's absolutely clear to me that you have a din of a ben chutz la'aretz if and when you go back to Israel. And he says, even though some achronim, he quotes, say that people learning Torah in Israel have a din of Israelis, but that's only when they have no connection to chutz la'aretz. Only when their parents have totally agreed that they can settle in Israel and that they will support them in Israel and not expecting to come back. But you, Bachur sheyesh lo kesha im horav, she'ein lo haskama kazu me horav. People like you who have a link with their parents, who are supported by their parents, and their parents have not agreed for them to settle in Israel, and you have no permanent residence, dirak vuar in Israel, rak shalom b'chadrei lina shel hayeshiva. Yes, you sleep in the dormitory. That does not make you an Israeli. Kol zman shelo nasei shveret Yisrael. As long as you haven't married a lady in Israel, sha'az, if you marry v'dayto lilashkei beretz Yisrael, and you together, a young couple, decide to live in Israel, then you have a din of an Israeli, like the Weinsteins. The kol shekein, that you're here in America visiting your parents, what does that have to do with Israel? You're an American. And even in Israel, under these conditions, you have to act, live, observe like an American. And that's Reb Moshe. It is said that this individual, I heard this from 50, 40 years ago while this was going on. They say he lived, he came back to Israel, took quite a few years till he got married. And people always wondered, here he's living here 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, 6 years. And he's total chutz la'aretz in accordance with Reb Moshe's psak. So you see, this question hangs fire. The machloket is basic. Shulchan Aruch against the revolution, against his psak. How do you paskin? Halacha l'maisa, I'll only tell you, whenever I get a call of an inquiry, Rebbe, we heard you know something about Yom Tov Sheni, I always say to them, do you want a psak, or do you want me to justify what you want to do? If you want a psak, I'll always paskin a day and a half l'chumra. But if you want me to justify what you want to do, I have to be honest, yesh panim lekan v'yesh panim lekan. And I can tell you, those of you who have good memories, about 20 years ago, Heshuth Shechta got caught up in a big conflict on this topic because he paskined against the Rav time after time. Paskined like the Shulchan Aruch, paskined like Rav Shlomo Zalman, paskined like Rav Moshe Feinstein. All right, he's a posek, he knows what the Rav paskined, he disagrees, fine. And then there was a family going from Beverly Hills, do you remember? And they told him, no, they're not going to observe it. The parents only got a psak one day and one day and one day. So he paskin for the young college kids. All right, do as your father and mother are doing. And of course, the Yamei Aretz started yelling, Reb Heschel changed his mind, what's happened here, Beverly Hills, what's the influence, why the change? All right, it creates lectures for us to explain, Yesh Panim Lekan, V'yesh Panim Lekan. Okay, now I want to go one step further and deal with some of the questions I got. I'm very in depth to Rabbi Yeshua Grinstein. He and Rabbi Kenny Branda created a magza for this year. I made a number of copies now. Of course, we're going to make a minyan in our building. It seems we have a Sefer Torah now. I don't know if we have anyone who can lay, and I have so many grandchildren who are good. I have one grandson who's a fabulous Bal Korei, Herbie. Chaim Vic knows him, and Herbie also has met him on occasion. But the problem is he's in Haifa. I'm at 18 Berlin, so it's not going to help much. But they created a marsa with basically the piyut is left out. I'll tell you what the big problem is with davening in our own house. We have to daven outside, and the problem of the heat. Most of our people are older. The whole problem with dehydration is a very, very real problem. I've suffered from it recently. And even if we begin at 7, by 9 o'clock, it can be very hot out. And Rosh Hashanah is not, from what my daughter tells me, one of my daughters checked it out, all right? She said it's not going to be like the last few days, but it is going to be over 30. So we're not dealing here with the proper fall weather yet. So the question is to daven and finish quickly. And there are other problems. You don't want to be exposed to germs. It's outdoors is much better than indoors. It's endless here. So I have to be very thankful they've come up now in print, what everyone's talking about, a special matzah for Rosh Hashanah for this year. If anyone wants a copy, you can contact Rabbi Grinstein. I'm giving you his phone number. 050-697-9500. I repeat it, 050-697-9500, or email Grunstein1, GRUNSTEIN1, Strudel, OTS.ORG.IL. I hope I have it right. Yoshua, correct me if I'm wrong. I repeat it again. Grunstein1@OTS.ORG.IL. Now, the other issue, and Yoshua, I have it right? Shake your head. Okay, Yoshua just shook his head, so I have it right. The other issue, which I got a number of calls from the States, it seems in the States there's a psak to blow the shofar and cover the end with the mask. In other words, put the mask on the end of the shofar. Well, people have complained that it's very hard to blow. You're blowing against the wall. I'll tell you, there's another shaila involved. You change the sound. It's the whole shaila now of blowing into a kad, a dut, a cave, etc. The Mishnah, the Mishnayot in Rosh Hashanah. So I have to tell you, Rav Asher Weiss, and he really is something very special. Rav Asher Weiss should live and be well. If you go online, and I have Morty sends it to me, and I print it out, Sheyurei Maran HaRav Shlita Kuntra Shvui to Pashit Ki Tavo this year. The whole first part of the Kuntras is devoted to blowing shofar. He went into shuls where they have the cubicles set up and plastic walls, etc. And people blew, and he listened far away, and he says, you do hear the kol shofar. That's number one. More important, he paskins lahalacha, don't cover the shofar. When you don't cover the shofar, you hear a perfect sound. The question of the germs, so he says very clearly, you have to have someone blow who's absolutely healthy, no signs of corona. And best to blow, obviously, either standing near an open door or standing near an open window. Blowing outside certainly is less of a problem because you don't have a cover on top when you're blowing. So halacha lemaisa, you have Rav Asher Weiss, yesh ami l'smoch, you can print it out, and he's very clear, lahalacha, better not to cover the shofar. Better physically, and it could even be better as far as the kol shofar. Finally, and here I have to tell you, I'm also greatly troubled. Rabbi Grinstein sent me a whole article on the most famous Rav in the Brisker world today, Rav Avram Yeshua. Rav Avram Yeshua is the son of Rav Yeshaber, the son of Rav Velvo. So, and Rav Avram Yeshua has a reputation. He's very sharp. I actually met him, and I can tell you he's very sharp. So it seems Elach Sechais, I don't know how to say that in English, but he's laughing at what we're being told here by the Misrab Habriyut, what we have to do, and he says it's the opposite of Das Torah, and And Rabbi Grinstein asked a very simple question. The Briscoe were the most machmir people in the world when it came to Bikuach Nefesh. Yoshua, listen to me carefully. You have a mistake in your letter. It's not that Reb Chaim told Rebbetzin Meisha Soloveitchik Pesha not to fast on Yom Kippur. He told her not to fast on the day of her wedding. That's what he told her. And it's all written up in memoir literature by her daughter, by Shulamit. And the Rav spoke about it. And she told Reb Chaim off that her father is a posek, Reb Elia Prujana, and she'll ask him, and he paskened for her to fast. But the Briska, Reb Velvel was once asked, was heistas bikuach nefesh? Reb Velvel said, even if there's 1/1,000,000th of a chance. So Rabbi Grinstein asked a very good question. Rabbi Grinstein, by the way, is my student, the son of a student, Zichrono Livracha Tzvi, Harry. So it's a long relationship. It goes back 50 years. So Rabbi Grinstein asked, how can this be that Rabbi Avram Yoshua is so machmi and lachsichais and pokes fun at the Mizvada Briyot? And I'll tell you, there's a terrible problem here that this stupid government has created. Kol zman you allowed the demonstrations outside the Prime Minister's home in Yerushalayim, in Caesarea, then of course the Haredi world is yelling and shouting, you are anti-Haredi. And they're absolutely right. This is, if they allow 10,000 people to rub shoulders, beat up policemen, spit at policemen, you don't know what's going on, what we're talking about. Yesterday, guy dressed up as a naked woman. And a naked woman, this is what you're showing in public after what happened in Eilat? Where are we at? And by the way, this is Ben-Gurion, the world he created. Thank God they're a minority of a minority of a minority. But because they're such a minority, they can't do anything when it comes to democracy, voting. So they have these demonstrations. America learns from here. We learn from America. Satan the Arachahu. And the wind-up is a decent, upright civilian has a hard time living in Rehavia today. That's all I can say. I come out at 6:45 with my wife. We go downstairs to Berlin, get a little air. You see them walking, parking their cars, walking with flags, Israeli flags, half black, blackened. God have mercy. With their eyes, women, one quarter dressed, one fifth dressed, Ribbono Shel Olam, walk around naked already. It's beyond words. It's sickening, sickening. There's no human dignity left. Remember my talk on Corona right after Pesach? I stand on every word I said, and I'm happy to tell you, every talk I've heard on Corona by Gedolei Yisrael, either they're quoting me word by word, or Shnei Neviim Hitnabdu B'Signon Echad. Baruch Hashem. So, I can understand the Haredi world. Halavai, they'll say, Kol Zman, people are dying, Pikuach Nefesh, no public demonstrations. Democracy will survive without demonstrations for a few months. Then we can say to the Haredi world, are you crazy? Are you idiots? This is Sakonik Nefashot. Give them a list of 100 Rabbanim who have died. 200 Talmidim, Tzadikim, Rabbaniyot, Ribbono Shel Olam, look who we have lost in Israel, in America, in Chabad, in Lakewood, in Manchester, in London, in Bnei Brak. Ribbono Shel Olam. But people are not that intelligent and don't understand who Ben-Gurion was and don't understand what he left us, the Morashah. So yeah, 10,000 people are killing themselves at the Prime Minister's residence. Why do you say boo if 10,000 people go to the Rebbe's or Rebbe's granddaughter's wedding? And this is, to me, a good part of the problem. Okay, I hope I'm wrong. There's no Das Teira from Rakefet. If my Rebbe, Mori Rebbe, used to say, Ichob nish Kain Ruach HaKodesh. I heard that with my own ears from the Rav. Now, what am I to tell you? If the Rav said Ahat Meshuach HaKodesh, who the heck am I? That my mind is warped? Do I cry when I look at the Yankees today? And I think, was this Amol Gaven, Joe DiMaggio, Tommy Henrik, Charlie Keller, HaGadolim HaShem HaAretz, Rebbeinu Shel Olam. But at least the Rav also learned baseball. So, David, I'm not in that bad company. Okay. Then there's one more question. I apologize. Give me another 2 minutes. One more question I got that I never answered, and it's, I should answer it. A very simple question. Question came in from a shul, I think it was in Baltimore. Has there ever been a time when Jews had to worry about when to make a minion, how to make a minion, that Rakefet has to go crazy, we're going to have a minion downstairs, will we have a minion, who do we have Balei Tefillah, that we, Baruch Hashem, we have a Torah, we have to insure it, by the way, they're lending us a Torah, but we have to insure it, etc. Has there ever been a time? Gentlemen, who was here after the Yom Kippur War? Raise your hands. After the Yom Kippur War, during the Yom Kippur War, there were total blackouts at night. What we went through on Sukkot, what we went through Simchas Torah, we had to make early minyanim. You couldn't daven regular time. You couldn't walk in the streets. Total blackouts. They were worried about planes bombing us. But you talk about, this is a question. What about the Holocaust? Shem Yirachem? How many stories, what's going on in Yad Vashem, what's going on in Borah, in Bnei Brak, they now realize how frum Jews were Maisa Nefesh to learn Torah, to daven, the stories in the camps, midnight when there were no gods around, they passed around the Siddur, passed around Tefillin. Shem Yirachem. Talk about the cholera epidemic. Go back to Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, almost 200 years ago, 180 years ago. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter making Kiddush in the shul on Yom Kippur, right or wrong? And again, there was machlokes, Jews criticized. But Rabbi Yisrael said, if I wouldn't make Kiddush in public, most Jews wouldn't eat, wouldn't drink. Each one would say to himself, this is why we drive. Did you ever wonder, you see a terrible accident, and then you just drive on, you're driving. People were just killed a mile behind. You just passed it. But this is a good defense mechanism, and a healthy person, Liza lo yikra. It won't happen to me. All right. Sometimes it's good to think that way, and sometimes it's very harmful to think that way. So Rabbi Yisrael said, people will say, Yom Kippur, I should eat, I should drink. But they saw Rabbi Yisrael, Rabbi Yisrael, hat ge'essen, hat getrinkt, mir dafenechet, we have to too. Talk about the Crusades, talk about the Muranos, I could go on and on. The Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, the Romans, the decrees. So unfortunately, there's a long history of when we Jews had to worry about how we're going to daven, how we're going to learn Torah. It's nothing new, but we should just pray to the Ribbono Shel Olam. People should do tshuva, chodesh tshuva. Listen to the shofar, whether you can blow in person or listen to a recording, the Rambam, Parak Gimel. Hidoreru Yishenim. We should come back, Balev Shalem. It'd be a terrific year. My dear students, I wouldn't miss tomorrow's shiur for all the gold in Fort Knox and for all the dollars that the state of Israel owns, more than ever in the history of the country. Wow, are we in a wealthy country? Unbelievable. We pick up exactly where we left off, post-World War II. What has happened. And I finish out what I was speaking about last week. I have to deal with a terrific question. Why are the Yekkers all gone? I hope Charlie will be with us tomorrow. And then I'm going to deal with Joslit and her evaluation and Rabbi Riskin and Rabbi Lichtstein. And then I deal with Gadol Rabbi Shemo, my classmate, Dr. Grach, Rabbi Dr. Professor Chaim Soloveitchik. Tuesday, I'm going to speak a half hour in Gris on Rabbi Attenstein's oaths. Rabbi Bednash asked me if they want to eulogize him. I did say a few words in class, but Tuesday will be more barichut and put him into historic perspective. I want to thank you all from the bottom. Yeah, Dinei Tzava, Dr. Licht is showing me on the screen Rav Mina HaSeifa. Dinei Tzava u'milchama. I want to thank all of you for honoring me with your presence. It's very inspiring, I have to say. It's very difficult for me because I don't know what I'm doing and what I'm looking at and all the technology. But I have to thank Morty Tarragon from the bottom of my heart. And I have to thank Yomo, who saved us today. In the middle of the shiur, we went blank. And here we are, able to say goodbye in dignity. Until we meet again, and again, once again, greetings to the Weinsteins, to the two generations looking at me. And it should be a good aliyah, a klita tova. You should be zeicha to see that the Gemara was incorrect. You know what I'm talking about? The Gemara, Eretz Yisrael, niknet b'yisurim. And you should be zeicha to be able to say that Gemara doesn't apply all the time. Until we meet in health and happiness, das v'danya. Morty, Yomo, open it if there are any questions.
The recording has stopped.
Okay, are there any questions?
I wanted to pass along, my parents wanted me to tell you that they very much appreciated it, so they wanted to
wait, your parents very much appreciated? I didn't hear.
Shvatami, the talk that you gave.
Shvatami talk. I got a lot of unbelievable comments on that talk. I can't repeat some of them because they're too, they would sound too arrogant in my point, to put it mildly. But
I just looked it up. The master that you mentioned is also on their website. OTS.
Right.
ORG.
Right, right.
And I have to thank you. One second.
Yeah. Don't thank me. Thank Rabbi Grunstein and Rabbi Kenny Branda. They're the ones who put it together. Okay? Yeah. I have nachat because...
No, I'll send it on. She wanted to know what to say and everything. So I'll send this on to her. I'll see what we can do about
her. No, send it on. But make clear it's only for this year under these conditions.
She was right at the beginning.
You know my famous story with Duvi Hartman, where he says, "Throw the piyut out. Throw it. It doesn't speak to us. Come, we got to finish davening on Yom Kippur at 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock, and go home and think." Chas v'chalila, I don't agree with that at all. But this year is a different year, and we have to be able to make the most of it. Okay, Yomo, sign off. I got to get back to the normal world and catch my breath until we meet again tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock in health and happiness. Das vidanya.